Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today we have a very interesting guest. I've been kind of waiting to interview him since I got some of his information. So I'm going to bring him on right away so we can talk to him. His name is Stephen Sidoni. And, Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Nancy.
Well, Stephen, I have a few questions to ask before we get into part of what you've been doing. I'd like to know a little bit about who Stephen really is. Like, what prompted you to start doing your writings and do all the research that you've done?
Well, initially what started was I came through it in a surprising manner. I had gone up to New York. My mother and my brother, my mother was homebound in a wheelchair. My brother was a challenge where he was having schizophrenic problems, and I left Georgia to go to New York to help care for my mom and my brother. And at the time, my mom was getting home care, and she was having problems with the people that were taking care of at the agency. So it meant that I had to, you know, take care of both of them, and it made it very difficult for me to go out there to get compensated for a job. So I decided, well, what was I going to do? At the time, I said, well, I like to write. So I decided to sit down and write, and I started writing some screenplays, and realized I liked to write, and things were going the right direction. And in late December of 2007, I had just finished writing a screenplay. It was around Christmas, and it was at that time I decided to spend a couple hours on the internet to search for any interesting stories that I could write about. And as fate would have it, I stumbled upon The Legend of J.C. Brown after reading a short excerpt from a book written by author Emily A. Frank entitled Mount Shasta, California's Mystic Mountain. At that point, At that point, I became very fascinated by the legend. And for those of you who haven't heard about the legend, basically what I read on the internet was that The Legend of J.C. Brown was a baffling story about a man who in 1934 appears at the office of the editor of the Stockton Record newspaper in California and spins a tale about a lost treasure that he had found 30 years earlier in 1904 while employed as a geologist with the Lord Cowdrey Mining Company of England. So what was interesting about it is he appears in the editor's office, and at that point, 80 eager Stockton residents, including the newspaper editor, a museum curator, a retired printer, and several scientists, and solid citizens form a group, and they plan for 6 weeks to investigate the tunnel with J.C. Brown. So for 6 weeks, they were all at John C. Root's home, who was the organizer, and they planned to go up to Mount Shasta to find the treasure that J.C. Brown had told them lied under the mountain.
So when you were researching it and that caught your interest, talk a little bit about maybe why it seemed so interesting to you.
Well, what seemed interesting was that this was a major story in 1934, and the group that waited on June 19th at 1 p.m. at John C. Root's home waited for his arrival at 1 p.m., but he never showed up. So they waited till the next day, and then the Stockton police were called in to see if the man had been kidnapped or if there was any foul play, if he had taken any money from the 80 people. So it was a major story in the newspaper, and they found that the man just simply disappeared. But the 80 people were all in the belief that this man was telling the truth, and there was a vast tunnel of Mount Shasta filled with golden artifacts that he was going to show them. But for whatever the reason, he just simply disappeared. So after reading that story, I wrote down all the clues that I had learned from reading the legend on the internet, and I decided to go to the New York Public Library and do my own investigation and see if I could solve the 73-year-old mystery surrounding the man known only as J.C. Brown.
That sounds like that would probably be pretty interesting. Now, have you gone to Mount Shasta?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what you felt while you were there.
Well, cutting to the chase, I knew that once I discovered on paper that the man of the legend, J.C. Brown, actually did exist. His name wasn't J.C. Brown. I found out who the real identity of the man was. When I tracked his life and his ongoings for 30 or 40 years, I then put together a theory as to what would bring him to Mount Shasta and how he was able to find this tunnel. And I was able to find a map that I believed was located on a property. It was on the Shasta Springs Resort property, which at the time was in Dunsmuir, California, and they were known for having the greatest water on earth. And opulent people, rich people from all over the world would come to Dunsmuir. They'd take the train up, and they would spend days on the property and drink the sparkling water, and they would have the benefits of this the natural springs in Dunsmuir at the Shasta Springs property. So it was my belief that not too far from this property, I would find this unusual basalt rock formation that J.C. Brown found in 1904 and then went back in 1907 and dug out that led to the underground civilization of Mount Shasta. So I did venture out here. I came out here in April, and I followed the clues. I was able to have a map with me when I came out here of where I believe the tunnel would lie. And I had some other information that someone had claimed that they had also come across this unusual rock basalt foundation, and it was also in Dunsmuir. So when I came to Dunsmuir, I searched for the man who had put it on the internet that he had come across the same rock formation, and I was able to learn the identity of the man, and I spent a couple of days in Dunsmuir, and as luck would have it, I myself came in contact with the back doors to Telos that J.C. Brown claimed he found in a legend. So I did find the back door to the tunnel that J.C. Brown found in 1904.
Did you have the opportunity to go into it?
Well, there's the two doors now are sealed off. There's two doors cut into the rock, and it is where the water comes back from Mount Shasta, the lava tubes that come back from Mount Shasta. And now the back of the wall was sealed off, and the Dunsmuir Water Company now pipes water out of this rock formation and supplies the city of Dunsmuir their water. So now this structure is on private property, and only the people who own the property can go on the property, but where this back wall is now part of the Dunsmuir Municipal Water Company. So they have sealed off the back entrance. But the interesting thing is, I'm 99.9% certain that I'm right, because J.C. Brown in the legend claimed that 11 miles and 2,300 feet from the spot of these doors is where he came across the Lemurian civilization living under Mount Shasta. From the spot of these doors that I found, it is approximately 11 miles, just as J.C. Brown claimed in the legend and in the newspapers in 1934 in the Stockton Record.
Back in 1934, the people that actually went searching, did they find anything?
Well, what happened was he came up to Stockton, California at that time looking to get people enlisted with him to go from Stockton, California to Mount Shasta at his expense. And what he wanted them to do, because he said there was two tunnels that he had found, and he wanted them to catalog all the items. In one chamber, there was a king and queen embalmed in there that he believed was the king and queen of Lemuria, and he wanted to leave that room intact. But he told the 80 people that he would allow them, you know, the artifacts in other rooms so they could keep. And so 80 people were going up there with him, but the morning of June 19, 1934, J.C. Brown just simply disappeared. So everybody was left holding the bag, waiting for, you know, for him to show up, but he just mysteriously disappeared. So they were all of the opinion that the man was very knowledgeable about the ancient civilizations and that he was telling the truth.
So the Lemurians, that's
yeah.
who he claims may have been connected with this, or that came from some of your research?
No. He claimed in the 1934 newspaper that through all his 30 years of research, from the time he found it until the year when he shows up in 1934, because when he shows up in 1934 at the Stockton Record newspaper, he tells the newspaper editor and the museum curator, Harry Noyes Pratt, that he spent 30 years with the same company, the Lord Cowdery Mining Company, working as a geologist, and he waited until he was retired from the company because he didn't want Lord Cowdery himself to lay, you know, to get part of the claim. So he wanted to wait until he was retired to come back up there. But he, in that 30 years, he did his own research, and he said that he was convinced that what he found underneath Mount Shasta was the civilization of the Lemurian people.
When it comes to the Native American Indians in that area, did you have a chance to really talk to any of them while you were there?
Yes, I did. I came up last year, and I went up to Olympia, Washington. It was interesting, and I have a movie that that I'm going to be getting out for distribution called The Legend of J.C. Brown, but I'll give you a little excerpt as to how I learned what I learned, and I find out about the Native American oral tradition. A friend invited me out after listening to me on Coast to Coast with George Noory last April, and I came out last June to Olympia, Washington. And as I got there, a phone rang, and she said it was her friend Jimmy, and they were talking. And turned out he said, I'm coming over to see your friend. Can I speak to him? So she hands me the phone and says, I don't even know how he knew you were coming. So I get on the phone with this Native American elder, and he said, I'm going to be over an hour. I need to talk with you. So I hung up the phone. I was just kind of was taken aback by the fact that how does this man know I'm here and has to talk with me? And he's a very powerful Native elder with the tribe there in the area. So now later he comes over, and he asked me a little bit about the legend. We're having a cup of coffee, and so I told him a little about my research being on George Noory. And so he then asked if we can take a walk. So him and I took a walk around the property, and at that point, he said, there are things I need to tell you. He says, A, the Lemurians do exist. He said, so I said, well, can you give me specifics? He said, well, my grandfather has seen them many times on the Nisqually River fishing. They would be fishing, and they are, you know, we're their descendants, and they live underneath Mount Adams and Mount Rainier and all the other mountain ranges in the Pacific Northwest. And we are their direct descendants. So I asked him, well, what do they look like? He says, well, my grandfather said they were between 8 and 9 feet tall, and they had long hair. Some of them wore buckskin clothing, but they were definitely, you know, an ancient race that went underneath the ground to live. So I asked him, well, when did this all happen? And he cited the fact that this happened over 40,000 years ago during after the Ice Age. So what was curious to me was, you know, you've got scientists trying to give us this 12,000-year timeline when Native Americans supposedly came from China through the Bering Straits over six treacherous mountain ranges and brought with them fauna, plant life, animals, and a civilization coming into North America, which, you know, and so I found this very interesting that we would be giving what I call the Bering Strait lie. So after listening to what he had told me, I realized, I says, well, why do you think, I said, your oral history has been trying to be diluted or trying to be discredited? He says, well, when we were first, when the U.S. government first had us go to reservations, they came with us and tried to give us all different sorts of religions. They threw many different religions at us. And they said, well, just pick one. We don't care which one you pick, but just pick one. And he remarked afterwards, we tried them all. They didn't work. So I said, why do you think that is? He says, well, they wanted us to forget our oral history. So I says, well, what is your oral history? He says, well, we've been on the North American continent, you know, more than 40,000 to 100,000 years on this continent. So at that point, I started to do some research. And lo and behold, I did find that there are references by other Native Americans. Vine Deloria Jr. has a book called White Native Americans and White Lies, and it talks about the Bering Strait and how long the Native Americans were really here on this continent. Thereafter, I started doing some more research about it because this tied in, you know, very closely to the timeline, because the timeline to me was very important. And then I came across a book, and It's called The Osferous Gravels of the Sierra Madre of California, written by Josiah D. Whitney, who was the head person for the United States in 1860 for the Geological Survey. And what his job was to do was to take geological measurements of the geography throughout the United States. And what he found was there was a mine in California. And this mine, they found in the gravels a skull that was below the ice age line. And what they did was they, by scientific measurements, the ground around where the skull was found was determined it was over 50 million years old where the skull was found. And the skull was determined by Josiah D. Whitney and other Harvard scientists that was the oldest known record of a skull in the United States found in California in this mine, which dated over 50 million years. So if modern man is over 12,000 years old, then this could explain why the Native Americans have been brutalized, colonized, and Christianized to keep the great deception, you know, in play.
Which I totally agree with the way things were handled many times from our government.
Well, you're exactly right.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm very interested in most of the stories because I have a very firm belief that most of the Americans have been lied to since day one, even when it comes to history and Christopher Columbus and all that stuff. But that's
well,
just my opinion.
You mentioned Christopher Columbus. Good point. And I come from part of my background is Italian and Jewish ancestry. And one of the things that always bothered me is that they had a man by the name of Christopher Columbus that they have a parade for, and his real name is Cristobal Colon. Was not born in Italy, did not speak Italian, spoke Portuguese, wrote Castilian and Spanish, was married to a Portuguese woman, and they had a shop in Portugal, and has no ties to Italy whatsoever. But what I did learn recently is that the reason that they might have tried to point him off as being Italian, because what I'm led to believe now, that he was of Jewish ancestry and he was a Sephardic Jew, and they didn't want that to be known. So it's interesting why, you know, things have been manipulated and kind of turned around. But in his 3 years from 1492 to actually 1497, in Hispaniola, there was about 6 million indigenous people there at the time. But in the years that he was viceroy there, the population went down to like a 500,000. So he's responsible for the deaths of millions of indigenous people. So not from, sickness or disease, but from, barbarism and brutality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd heard that also. But that's not the story, of course, that we get told. The Native American Indian that you talked with when you were at Mount Shasta, do you stay in contact with him?
Yes, I do. I'm in contact with many Native Americans as a result of the people that I've met and the fact that I've gained certain confidences because I'm a seeker of truth, Nancy, and what's right is right, what's wrong is wrong. And if you don't understand the past, how can you understand the present, and how will you know where you're going, especially as a nation?
All of that is true, Stephen. I totally agree with you. You know, I'm kind of curious. In and on Mount Shasta, was there different kinds of designs or anything that the Native American Indians may have carved into the walls that you saw while you were there, the hieroglyphics of any kind?
Well, the hieroglyphics I found, strangely enough, weren't on the mountain itself. The doors, the back doors to Telos, has certain symbolism that I found on the doors, and I was told that if I was able to touch the doors in a certain way, it would open with a monolithic stone coming out of the base. So I tried to do that, but unfortunately I wasn't able to move this monolithic rock formation. But what I did find also near Dunsmere was what is called the Castle Crags petroglyphs. And I have on YouTube, you can go to YouTube and you can see some of my YouTube movies on that. What I did is I did an excerpt on a story from Emily A. Frank's book, Mount Shasta, California's Mystic Mountain, regarding the Castle Crags petroglyphs. And these petroglyphs are supposedly maybe 50,000 to maybe could be a million years old ancient symbols. So I went out with a friend of mine, and we went out and actually found these petroglyphs on this rock that are ancient symbolism. So at that point, I said, well, let me talk to the Native Americans in the area and see what they tell me. Well, they said to me, Stephen, it was not the work of the Native American. This predates, you know, our own history. And the rocks themselves in the area where I found them were dated to be, you know, millions of years old. So what I will tell you is this. Man has been on this planet, I'm going to go on a record and say, 300 million years. And thereafter, they were dinosaurs. We coexisted with them. And long after dinosaurs, we've been on Earth. And there have probably been four or five civilizations that have sprung up in the course of this 300 million years. And only the last one in the last 10,500 years is being recognized.
Why is that?
To keep the existing paradigm, to allow the people who've been in control the last 2,000 years using religious dogma to control the sheep, so to speak, to believe blindly that they can, you know, use this information so that way people don't seek the truth. For example, if I were to go and to get a permit for, let's say, a church, I wanted to start a new church, and I'd say, well, my religion is, we'll believe it when we see it. I would be denied a permit. But if I went in and said, we're Presbyterian, we're going to be Catholic, we're this, well, what's going to be your mission statement? Well, we're going to believe blindly. That's okay, here's your permit, Mr. Sindoni. Because if the light is on, people will listen, people will learn, and they'll start to listen and to question things. I mean, I believe in half of what I hear, and I investigate the other 50%. And I challenge anyone, Nancy, who's listening today, to do their own homework, to do their own research, to question what I have to say. Because what they're going to learn is the mind is like a parachute. It can only work if it's open. And we all need to know that if this existing paradigm right now is incorrect, then every time you're told something, you need to question it. Because right now there's only six companies that own all the newspapers, internet, radio, and television that are controlling everything that we say and do. And I will cite one thing for an example. I believe in peace. But when I grew up, there was a Vietnam War going on. But as a result of the Kent State rallies and the kids were gunned down by the National Guards, the people were in an uproar. And as a result of that, it was televised and laws were changed that they went from a draft to a lottery. And some of us did not go to war as a result of it. In those years, wars were televised on TV. That you'll never see again. We have thousands of people now that are dying every day in these countries, in Iraq and Iran, that you'll never see. You'll watch the Super Bowl. You'll watch, you know, American Idol. You'll watch your favorite soap opera, but you won't realize what's going on. So America is being dumbed down as we speak, and I feel that it is necessary for me to get my findings and research out there so people can realize if they were deceived about the beginning, where is the world headed now?
I can answer that one for you. It's called disaster. Okay? See, what happened to me, and I'm just going to say this briefly, because when I'm interviewing somebody, I do not do a lot of talking about myself. I've been seeing visions since the time I was 6 years old. All these things going on in the world today, I've seen in my visions from the time I was six. And the visions are not easy to watch. They're not easy to get through, but they're being given for a reason, and that's to try to get the truth out. And people have this constant fear of truth, because if they learn truth, then that would mean by all rights they should take some responsibility to correct the wrong and make it right. And people today don't want to do that, at least the majority. And so a lot of things that when I interview people and we talk about them and we talk about what's going on and their opinions come up, they go right along with a lot of the visions that I've seen from a child all the way through to now. That's why when I ask you questions about the government and things, I'm not trying to make the government look bad. I'm like you. The truth would be nice, because we're really not getting it. You know, and you doing the research that you're doing, I think, is great, because the more people who do it, the more people who get, you know, their minds out of the sand and really attach their shoulders, the better chance we have of making this world work. And right now, the thing I tell everybody, and I use it as a little theme, it's like if you keep your head buried in the sand long enough, you are going to get your butt kicked really hard. That's been proven over and over again, and it's still being proven because, like you said, there are only six people, six families, whatever you want to say, that control the media, and they only do tell us what they want us to know. Unfortunately, there are people all over the world that I get to talk to, and I get to hear a lot of different truths, and that's fine. But, you know, when it comes to telling the truth, let's ask a little bit about you, because you're out there and you're trying to make things known. Are you or have you been threatened by anybody?
I've been followed probably for the last 11 years on and off by, I don't know who they are specifically, but I will just say there's been a number of attempts on my life that, being you've asked me now, I'll bring it out here because I kind of was kind of guarded with this because I believe that, you know, when it's time to come out, it will. And I've got a YouTube site, youtube.com/ Steve Sindone Reveal 53, where I show some of the photos of individuals who I've encountered in the last couple of years of surveillance watching me trying to do things, like some stories I expose regarding a secret covert group that operates in the shadows. But yes, I've had a number of things have happened to me, but I believe I am my most dominant thought. My most dominant thought, Nancy, is that I'll be around for a long time. I plan to be at my 90th birthday party and, you know, have many, many thereafter. And I believe that the more public I become, the less likely I will be threatened and followed and some of the other things that have happened, because they'll realize that I'm not the guy. I'm the guy that your mother warned you about, because I was brought up from my grandfather, who taught me that I need to stand up. And he taught me that as we watched our President John F. Kennedy be taken down in Dealey Plaza, and told me that it wasn't what we thought. And my father came in from work, and he seconded the opinion. So later on, years later, I learned that if we don't learn from the past, we will be doomed to repeat it. And I have nothing but the truth. If something were to happen to me tomorrow, Nancy, you know, I go to the maker, I go to the other side in peace within myself. I kid around with people and I say, you know, if you've ever followed sports, in hockey, for example, they have a penalty box. The more severe the crime that you do, the more time that you sit in the penalty box and you have to wait out. And you kind of get to see, you know, the replay, you know, on the big jumbotron of what you did, for example. I have nothing that I've done in my life that I'm really, you know, ashamed about, I'm sorry about, and have to really, you know, worry about, other than telling the truth and, you know, being a stand-up guy. It's the other individuals that I have to give forgiveness to, because they know not what they do, because if they only realize that guys like me are trying to make a better world for them, their children, their grandchildren, and future generations.
And it sounds like you're going to end up doing a great job of that. While, you know, would you give out your website, but spell your entire website so people spell it the correct way, and then also give out where they can find you on YouTube?
Okay. My website is my name, Stephen, STEPHENSINDONI.WEBS.com.
Okay, and your YouTube?
My YouTube is youtube.com, /, my last name, SINDONI REVEALED, 53, that's Sindone Reveal 53. And that would be at YouTube. I have probably at least 100 videos that people can watch on YouTube and related to all different topics. I'm also going to be on, I'm pitching myself here, doing a TV show, a regular TV show. It would be an Internet TV show on mctv15.org starting in September. The show will be called Legend, Mystery, and More. And I have to say, the title of your show got me where I needed a title when I saw "and more." I said, you know what? I got to tell Nancy. Her creativity gave me a little idea as to, not that I wanted to appropriate, but I want to give you props where props are due when I came up for my title a couple days ago for Legend, Mystery, and More, and that'll be starting in the fall. And that can be seen on the internet, and the first show will be an hour show, which will give people in entirety my DVD movie, which I just created, called The Legend of J.C. Brown, and explains the whole story with photos, and actually shows the back door to Telos that they can see in the, you know, on that show. Or, but if they go to my website or to my YouTube site, I have a video entitled Solving the Legend of J.C. Brown. Well, they'll actually get to see the back door of Telos and hear the story as it happened.
That's kind of neat. Now, you also have the Lemurian portal. It's been a big question. There are people who do know about that. There are other people who don't know about that. But you have it that, you know, part of your information. And I think the beat means there's a caller, but I just want to say this part, and then we'll see if there's a caller. So if there's a caller, hold on, please. You said back as far as 2008, there had been Lemurian sightings by
yes.
Dunsmore. Okay. Who did you talk to in order to find out that information?
Well, what happened was I had joined a group on the internet about underground civilizations, and a man by the name of James sent me a letter that a fellow posted on an underground website, Weather Underground website, and the man gave his name as Brad, and with the photo up for the back doors of Telos. And what happened was he sent it to me because he thought it would be of interest. And in this article, Brad was hiking last November with his daughter right near in Dunsmere, walking off a Thanksgiving dinner. And they were talking about Lemurian legends at the time, and they happened upon this unusual basalt rock formation and started taking photos of it. All of a sudden, a tall man in a robe approaches them out of nowhere, and they asked him where he came from. And he told them he came from the rock formation. He goes, from the back door of Telos. So they were startled, and he asked them if they wanted to come in to Telos. Well, they both declined his offer, and he asked them. He swore them to secrecy and told them that not to tell anybody what they had found. And the man had a slight British accent, who they had spoken to, and as quickly as he appeared, he disappeared. So after me getting this information and knowing the man. And the article claimed that his family was a longtime resident of Dunsmere, California, and that he was part of the Van Fossen family. I decided when I came to Dunsmere that I would look up the Van Fossen family and to see if I could find out who the man Brad was. Well, I went to Dunsmere, and again, as luck would have it, I was able to find a longtime resident who knew Brad, who gave me his last name, and gave me his email and phone number to contact. So I then had a good friend of mine contact him, because I didn't want to contact directly, because if he knew, you know, that I was the man of the legend, you know, he might not want to, you know, he might want to change his story. But my friend contacted him, and he stood behind his story, and the email he sent us back was that, yes, those doors are the back doors to Telos, and those back doors seal off the lava tubes that lead directly from Mount Shasta, which supplies the water, which also supplies the same water to Mossbray Falls, which is right near there. And that his grandfather was Levi Van Fossen, who was also the president of the Dunsmere Water Company. So his family knew of, you know, that this back door led to something, because J.C. Brown, in the legend, had gone up there a number of times. I tracked him through, you know, from through Mexico up to Dunsmere, and he had claimed that he had been kidnapped a number of times. So, in this area, there, every president since Teddy Roosevelt has been fishing in the waters of the Sacramento River right near Mossbray Falls. The only one right now who hasn't been there yet, which I wouldn't be surprised if he's been there now, is Obama. So every president, Bush has been seen there fishing in these waters here. So from Teddy Roosevelt on now, people know that this area has a mysticism and very powerful energy there, right there in Dunsmuir.
That's kind of neat. Now let's see if there's a caller. Is there a caller on the line holding? No. Okay. If somebody wants to call in, please feel free to do that. But I also have some other questions about your story, about J.C. Brown. Was that his real name?
No, it was not. Actually, the man's real name was John Benjamin Boddy. And John Benjamin Boddy did work for the Lord Cowdray Mining Company his whole career. I was able to find his life in a book of the American Civil Engineers, listing his whole life and his accomplishments while working under the employ of the Lord Cowdray Mining Company. So, no, he was English, and he lived in Mexico for 25 years, and he had come across the border in Laredo, Texas, with, in 1904, Lord Cowdray himself. And then I tracked them to the Shasta Springs Resort and then found that in 1907, J.B. Boddy came back over the border, not with Lord Cowdray the second time, with three other civil engineers to go to dig out the tunnel. And Lord Cowdray was very instrumental in helping J.B. Boddy, you know, supplying the engineers from his company. And he was very aware of, you know, what was found up in underneath Mount Shasta, because then in 1911, Lord Cowdray himself returned with J.B. Boddy over the border to go back up to, to Dunsmuir to go through the tunnel. So this was very documented on my end to be able to track these men, you know, over the borders and actually figure out, you know, that they were all civil engineers and that they all had a vested interest in these treasures that were found underneath the mountain.
Okay, a little bit earlier you said that J.C. Brown did not want Lord Connery to know anything or be part of that.
Well,
but yet, in research, you're finding out that that's not necessarily true.
Well, what happened was they did not want to go public with it because the U.S. government was now kidnapping J.B. Boddy. So it was decided that, you know, by J.B., he was going to wait until after Lord Cowdray died, which is in 1927, to stake claim to it, because it was very difficult for him to get any of the artifacts out of the country, because he would have to go through the Laredo, Texas border, and he had a vault that was in the Laredo National Bank on San Bernardino Avenue in Laredo, Texas, where he kept some of the papers and photos that he took of these finds there. So it was difficult being a non-American to be able to get these items out of the country without being detected.
Did he get all the items out of the country?
Well, that I'm not certain of what he was able to get out of the country. I'm sure he got some things out of there, but for the most part, that is an area that may never be known.
So we will probably never really know who got most of the artifacts and everything that's in there.
Correct. Right now I'm in the process of researching his genealogy back through England and Scotland to see if the heirs, who, you know, some may be alive that, you know, may have some of these items. But as at this point, you know, it's a tedious process, but I will be working on that next couple of weeks to see what the tie is on the other side of the Atlantic, so to speak.
Could have possibly the Lemurians or the Native American Indians there actually been able to take that out of there easier than, say, anybody else that even was affiliated with J.C. Brown?
I believe so, because once it was known that he had discovered this, there was probably a lot of people that would have the ability to either get these items or to seal off these caves that led, you know, 11 miles underneath Mount Shasta. I can tell you there are many cave entrances that that would lead under Shasta. But in the last 70 years or so, a lot of them have been sealed up, dynamited, and closed off. I mean, there are bars. Through researching here, I found other caves or caverns that now have steel girder bars that have been put up by the U.S. Forest Service to keep people out that lead underneath Mount Shasta. And people have told me that they were only put up here like in April, just before I got here. So I'm kind of like chuckling, because now that I'm researching going underground, I guess I'm the last person they want going underground at this point.
It sounds like it. Now, there's another thing that I want to ask you about, and it's really up to you if you want to talk about it or not. And that is one of the things that you said that you posted on YouTube about various, you know, kind of things going on. And one of them, you said that it says, Stephen discovers secret hidden message in Microsoft.
Yes.
Software. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, I do. I was sent, in Microsoft Reveal, I was sent a video made by the name of Chips Tatum, who worked for the CIA, and during the Iran-Contra thing, he thought he was delivering pharmaceuticals to a foreign country, and there was rough turbulence on the plane, and when he crash-landed, one of the contents of the cargo plane opened up, and he found out he was transporting cocaine. You can look up, there's a website for him as well. My video cites everything there, but the gist of the story is he went to Oliver North, who was his boss, and told him, you know, I thought I was, you know, delivering pharmaceuticals. What is this drugs thing? And they told him to be quiet. And he then thereafter left, went public, and not soon after, he was killed. But before he was taken out, so to speak, he showed the secret messages that were in Microsoft software that reveals the New World Order's agenda in Microsoft software that's been around since 1997. In their Word format, under the, I believe it's the Wingdings format, that show that they knew 3 years before that the World Trade Centers were going to be taken out. And there are certain letters that you put in. I explained that in the video, how to be able to yourself be able to see the clues that were left there. After I saw that to be true, I put up the video. I said, well, I'm going to spend a couple of days and play around in Microsoft Word's format and see if I can find any other secret symbolism. And I did. And what I found was interesting, showing DirecTV, a relationship to New World Order, that the TV sets now. And it's interesting that the TV sets now will be watching us. And I put up that module because right now there are people of you who've YouTube videos, because I gave them the challenge, you know, go out, do your own research, and have taken apart television sets and find out that there are microphones in there and a camera in there that can watch you as you're watching TV. Now, they'll argue that this technology is for future technology like the Jetsons, whereas when the telephone rings, you'll be able to, like right now, instead of us just being on a landline, I can see you and you can see me. So this future technology of the TV sets is already in these TV sets. So that way, they now have the ability to turn on your set without it being on and to monitor you in your home. And I put up a couple of videos citing that and who you can contact. Because if this information is correct that I put out there, America needs to wake up.
Well, first of all, the video phones are already out there, and all you can hook it into your television, and you can do a huge big screen face-to-face call with anybody else who has one of these video cameras. I mean a video phone. So that's already going on, okay? Again, I really believe that the Americans have a very hard time believing that our government could be as corrupt as the governments that we have been told that are corrupt. Because another one of the things that you make mention is that the Egyptians revealed that 9/11 was an inside job.
Yes.
And I know a lot of people do not want to hear that. There are several people out there who are challenging everything. So there are some people who are waking up.
Well,
and I'm really glad.
Well, you brought up 9/11, and I have a video called Sindoni Says, A New World Order Revealed, where I go public about a story that happened to me personally in 1998 in Montreal, Canada, where I was stopped at 2 o'clock in the morning by two men who were posing as policemen. But they weren't policemen. They were agents. And when I wouldn't show them my ID until they showed me theirs, what they showed me was badges of the Israeli Mossad secret CIA group. Upon their search, illegal search and seizure, I told them that I was going to go tell the customs at the border on returning back into the United States. This is September of 1998. When I went back to the border the following morning, because I couldn't even sleep that night, I was told by the U.S. customs officers that whoever stopped me was operating illegally and that they would do their best to find out who it was. When I got back into the United States, Nancy, I then became a person of interest. People started following me. In 2001, after the World Trade Center went down, actually, wait, I'm going to back up. In 1999, when I tried to go back into Montreal, Canada, I was stopped at the border and told that I could not enter the country because I come there too frequently. And I says, wait a minute. I says, I was here last year four or five times. I said, the reason why I come here is because I was a baseball fan, a New York Mets fan. I says, if you check the dates, you realize I was at Olympic Stadium watching my favorite team play, because Montreal's baseball team, to sit behind home plate was about $6 for a seat behind home plate, where in New York it would cost me $400 to watch for the same seat. I said, it's cheaper for me to come to vacation in Montreal to see a baseball weekend than to do it in my own town of Queens, New York. I said, you can check the dates. But what I learned at that point is that they knew that I blew the whistle on two guys who were operating illegally in 1998, the year before. Thereafter, after the World Trade Center, and you can see in my video, I cite this, that on 2001, after the World Trade Center went down, there were guys who were arrested in Jersey City that were high-fiving each other, like they were happy that the World Trade Center had come down. They arrested them. They found explosives in their vehicle, and our government detained them for 45 days before the Israeli government had these guys released on minor immigration violations. But these guys were found to have box cutters, C4, and maps, and what they were going to do was to blow up the Holland Tunnel and Lincoln Tunnel, but they got stopped in the process. After the World Trade Center, 3 months later, on December 29th, Channel 7, all the big ABC, NBC, and all the major networks, and you can look this up, it's archived. I have a video called Surveillance Revealed Part 2 that shows these fellas. Five men came in illegally over the Canadian border that our government said were persons of interest. Two of the five men were the men that stopped me in 1998. I then went to the FBI in Pennsylvania, the FBI in New York, and neither one of them would take my story. I went to the New York Times, the Daily News, and the New York Post, and they all blew me away. I then put it on a site called GoOff.com with a woman by the name of Carol Adler, who owns Dandelion Books, was told from her 3 days later that she got a phone call from a high-ranking Jewish official in our government who said that if she didn't pull my story, they would freeze her assets and close her business to take it down. So at that point, she called me back and said, Stephen, she says, I'm sorry, but I've got to get rid of your information. It's too hot. But I'll have someone from the Canadian government parliament contact you, which she did. The gentleman contacted me and said he was going to look into my story. 3 days later, I get a phone call back from him, whose name I'm not going to mention, and said that the story is too hot. His government told him that to drop it like a hot potato or else he would never work again, and this is in Canada. So at that point, I then became a person of interest, all because I can identify people who were involved in the plot to bring down the World Trade Centers. And this was an inside job. If it walks like a duck, Nancy, and it quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck.
Mm-hmm. There were a lot of websites out there when it first happened. And they were showing pictures as to why the story couldn't be true and the why that whatever we were being told, you know, there was no possible way that could happen. There were stories out there saying that it was an inside job, that it actually imploded the building, not exploded the building. A lot of people didn't understand that, and then what they did is they compared it to when they were bringing down some of the casinos out in Vegas, how they imploded it. and explained how that happens. And then they switched back to the Trade Center coming down and showed them that it was exactly the same way.
Well, I'm going to show you how history repeats itself. In 1993, when the Oklahoma building went down, just like a controlled demolition, the name of the company that was contracted to do the cleanup was called Controlled Demolition Incorporated. Do your research, anybody listening. The same company who was contracted to clean up of the World Trade Center was Controlled Demolition Incorporated. You can watch films, and the firemen will tell you they went up to the 86th floor and had to come back down because they believe they had the fire under control. And the firemen state that they heard, you know, explosions going off every couple of feet all the way back down to the ground floor, and the building came down, straight down. It defies logic. It doesn't make sense. And 16 million New Yorkers are living in denial, and it's very difficult to know, though, to believe that your own government could be, you know, could do that in order to perpetrate the Iraq War, to get people to believe that Osama bin Laden, supposedly, who's hiding in the cave without a roll of toilet paper, you know, and is on a dialysis machine, is responsible for this unbelievable, you know, tragedy.
Stephen, give out your website again. We're almost out of time. I mean, I have tons of other things to ask, but we're almost out of time. So please give out your website and your YouTube address also.
Okay. My website is my name, Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, Sindoni, S-I-N-D-O-N-I, .webs.com. That's stephensindoni.webs.com. My YouTube site, where you can find a ton of information, is youtube.com, Sindoni, S-I-N-D-O-N-I, Revealed, R-E-V-E-A-L-E-D, 53. And you'll find information also on the Great American Scam. I am now going to be exposing the fraudulent IRS tax system and show everyone in America how we've been deceived. And regarding legal fiction and a number of other things, I am now going on the offensive, Nancy, for the simple reason I've lost 11 years. You drew on this out of me today, and I thank you, because at some point I knew I had to do this, and it's kind of like a self-catharsis, because I want people to realize that if they don't wake up now, then they are doomed for a powerless future where the American dollar may not exist. We'll end up with the Amero, the Federal Reserve Bank, which is an illegal privately owned company, will then take more control, and these people who are in Europe who control the finances of this government will completely destroy the fabric of this great country that the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, was founded on.
The only problem with that is we don't have our constitutional rights anymore and haven't had them for a long time, and people aren't even aware of it.
Well, they're going to have to wake up, because if you snooze, you're going to lose.
I would tend to agree with you. So one more time, Stephen, give out the website, your YouTube, and if there's any way to contact you, if you want to give that out.
Yes. My website, again, is Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, Sindoni, S-I-N-D-O-N-I, .webs, W-E-B-S, .com. My YouTube, again, is youtube.com, /S-I-N-D-O-N-I-R-E-V-E-A-L-E-D, 53. And the way to get a hold of me would be by my email address, is screenwriter, S-C-R-E-E-N-W-R-I-T-E-R, 2012, @gmail.com.
Okay, real quick, repeat again because we went blank for a second.
Screenwriter, S-C-R-E-E-N-W-R-I-T-E-R, 2012, screenwriter, 2012, @gforgeorgemail, mail.com.
Great. Stephen, it's been great having you as a guest. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. And keep that good work going, because the truth needs to come out no matter what.
You're exactly right. And the truth will set us free. And you know what? The existing paradigm must change. It has to change. And there's no coincidence. I believe there's no coincidence in life. And this all has to happen. And if I'm the person who needs to put my little drop in the bucket to make that change happen, and so be it. And I'm glad that we had this opportunity today. And I thank you, Nancy Wallace, for the opportunity to give me the platform today to speak and share some amazing things that are part of my life and that have to be told.
Great. Again, I thank you. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I did. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and we'll talk next time. Take care. Bye now.